accession number 18778, Reel 2.
Ronald Hare, Reel 2. What was your flight over like?
Not too bad. There was a bit of flak as we got over the French coast. You could see flak in the air like. And it was all right till we come to where the dropping zone was. And we had to fly over one field. It had them stakes in it. It flew over that. It let us go. Cast off. We came down. As we came down, the plane flew up again. The glider flew up again and went straight into a tree. And of course, it smashed the truck. So we had to get out of it as fast as we could. Get the gun out, get all the ammunition out, and then wait till they sent us something to take the gun off out the field and where we was going to go.
Why did the glider come up?
Well, it hit the ground and just bounced up again.
Was that because of the stakes?
No, we'd passed over them. But whether it was to do anything to do with the air brakes or anything like, you know, but it just hit the ground and poof. Some of the gliders just hit the ground and fell over. Depended on the glider pilots, more or less. If there was good glider pilots, you could be all right, like, but it depends.
Was anybody injured?
No, as it happened, no. It was just the gun. It was the truck. It smashed the truck, so we couldn't use it to tow the gun. And we had to wait. Everybody cleared the field, and in the end, the Bren carrier come to pull the gun to take us off the field. So we didn't know where we was, because everybody had dispersed then. So the sergeant said, we'll follow the rail line, the road down by the rail line, like, and we followed it down. And so we came into what then was the low road in Oosterbeek. And there was the church there. And the sergeant said, right, we'll drop the gun front of the church there in the field. He said, it's facing down the road that way, and it's facing the road that way. Two directions. Fair enough, late, so we dropped the gun there. Monday and Tuesday was reasonably quiet. And the sergeant says, right, there's a pillbox on that railway line down the road there. So he said, right, man the gun. We'll have four shots in there. We put four shots in it. And after that, we were getting mortared every day. It was coming right and left. And people get injured with shrapnel. We lost most of the gun team with shrapnel. And it was just me and the sergeant left.
Had you been hit yourself?
No, not as it sounded, no.
Was that Sergeant Thomas?
That was Sergeant Thomas. It was just me and him left. And he said that our gun had meanwhile been hit with shrapnel and it had run back. So he said, well, there's a 6-pounder across the road. We'll go and have a look at that. So we crossed the road, went in through the front door of the house, and as we were going through to the back door where the gun was, an 88 opened up on the house. And it caught the sergeant, big piece of shrapnel, right in his shoulder, there. I got just a little nick there, under my eye, there, that was all.
On your left cheek?
Yeah, there. And it knocked his shoulder bone, about 5 inches out of his back, like that, woof, God. And he fell back on me. And I thought to myself, he won't live well morning, this. So I carried him down to the cellar where the wounded was, like, and I left him there. I thought to myself, well, there's not much I can do with him. And so then I was out with the glider pilots. The glider pilots had come round, and I was out with them, and we was fighting our way from house to house while the tanks was blowing all the walls down and everything.
Can you describe the house-to-house fighting that you were in?
Oh, yes. Yeah, as fast as you moved into one house, the tank was knocking it down and you was moving into another one, like, yeah, all the time. Yeah. Then there was one time there was trying to carry a 6-pounder. There were about 15 men trying to carry a 6-pounder around to get at one of the tanks, but it didn't do much good. Not on them Mark 6 tanks. You had no chance. What we needed was some armoured division with us, you see, but that you haven't. When you go into action like that, you have no armoured division. The Yard's armoured brigade was with the 2nd Army trying to get through, going down the road. But they might have managed to get through, because they'd got over Nijmegen Bridge. But I think they'd been told to rest for the night and rest up. And of course, nobody knew what was happening all over the place, like, you know, because, I mean, units was dispersed all over. Men was just fighting in groups and that, like.
And you were fighting with the glider pilots, weren't you?
Yeah, yes, for a while, yeah. And then in the end, they decided to retreat across the river.
Whereabouts were you doing this house-to-house fighting?
Round the Oosterbeek area, yeah.
What kind of houses were there?
Oh, just like most houses, you know. Some had a cellar downstairs, like, but they're just ordinary houses, yeah.
How long were you doing it for?
Oh, for about 4 days, yeah.
Can you describe any incidents that happened to you during that fighting?
No. We got cut off one time by a tank, and that's how I come to get with the glider pilots, because they was the ones that came to get us out. And
how did it come about that you were cut off?
Well, we got into this building, and this tank dropped down at the end of the street. And we thought to ourselves, well, if we go out now, like, the tank will see us. So we better lay low for the night. And we waited, and in the morning, the glider pilots came. And they said, right, we'll have you out of here. And they had us out. And that was it, like, yeah.
How big a party of men were you usually in this house-to-house fighting?
Oh, 6 or 7, yeah.
Was that the best size of group?
Well, there was groups all over, like, you know. I mean, you know, you was fighting all over the place. I mean, some was fighting individually and that, like, depends on what units there was in, like. I mean, shoot 'em.
Who was giving you orders?
Nobody, really, no. No.
So how did you know what to do?
Well, you were just doing the best you could, like, yeah.
You mean if you saw a German, you just fired at him?
Well, if you could fire at somebody, you would, though. And that was it, like, yes. I mean, you know, it was just a matter then of survival. That's the top and bottom of it.
But did you have an objective? Were you aiming to get to somewhere, or?
Well, no, because you didn't actually, you had no officers, because where we was, we didn't even know where the headquarters was, which was actually, later on, it was the Harkenstern, but we didn't know where it was from where we was. So, once the sergeant had gone, with nobody to tell us what to do or that, like, you know. So, it was just a matter of, you was fighting where you could, and it was a matter of survival.
What did you think of the Germans you were fighting against?
Well, they said that before we went, like, they said, oh, you'll be all right there, like, there's no tanks, they're washed up on that lake, and of course, nobody thought anything about it, till they got into action, and one of the tanks was, I think it was the 10th, the 10th Italian summit, it had been in action anyway, one of the tank groups that was supposed to be resting up there and wouldn't have any trouble from them, according to the reports we got. We got more trouble than enough.
Were the Germans you fought against good fighters or not?
Oh, reasonable fighters, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, they did look after the wounded, like, yeah. So,
did you do much damage to the Germans, do you think, your group?
Well, no, not really. After that pillbox, like, now then it was just spasmodic, you know.
Which pillbox was that?
That one that I was mentioned earlier, where it was over the railway bridge, where we knocked that out, like, but...
Where you had the anti-tank gun?
Yeah, when we had the anti-tank gun, yeah. But I mean, after that, well, it was just street fighting, like. Well, I mean, a lot of them really... I mean, I've been in the in the infantry, and knew what it was like to handle a rifle and what have you and that, like. But I mean, a lot of them are artillerymen, they're not used to having rifles and firing and that, like, really.
Were you using a Sten gun or a rifle?
Yeah, a Sten gun, yeah.
Was it of any use in that type of fighting?
Not really. As I said, you had to keep checking the ammunition because the springs on the magazines was useless. If you kept it in too long, you had to take it out and then put it in again.
Could you not get other weapons like rifles or grenades?
Well, no, because we had no grenades with us. And nobody had any weapons to give us, because they was using them themselves.
What did the Germans use against you?
Oh, they used the Smeisers. The machine guns. One of the fastest firing machine guns there was at that time was the Smeisers. Yeah.
Was it a destructive weapon?
It was a destructive weapon, yeah. It could cut men down quick, yeah.
Did you capture any Germans?
No, we didn't, no. No, they caught one or two early on when the first landing, after about a day, 2 days, but after that, when they got organised. Well, that was it, the Germans. No chance then.
Did you come across any Dutch civilians?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes. Where we was, that's where Kate Horst, that Dutch woman, that attended to a lot of the wounded. She had a house just up the road. There, at back of the church, and she looked after loads of wounded people. Yeah.
Did you see her yourself?
Yes. Oh yes, I saw her. She died later on, after the war. Yeah, she was a great woman.
Did she treat you?
Oh no.
How frightening was this fighting?
Well, he was a bit scared. Because you thought to yourself, well, am I going to cop it like anybody else? Or so, as you would say, when you knew that it was getting near the end, it was a matter of hanging on, surviving as best as you could.
Were you ever in the same house as German troops?
No. No.
How near to them did you come?
Oh, what would say, when we was cut off that town, would be to this bungalow, to the end of the bungalow there, where the house is now. See the high roof, about that far off.
About 50 yards?
Yeah, about that far off.
How did you do for food and drink?
Well, you had to ground where you could. We managed to get a compo box, there was about 20 share in it, and it's a compo box for 14 men for a day. Then another time we managed to get hold of a pannier. The planes had come over and had dropped a pannier. And when we opened the pannier, it was full of red berries.
What kind of red berries?
The one we were on, all red. Yeah.
And what was in the compo rations?
Well, there was cigarettes, chocolate, tins of stuff, chocolate pudding, a chocolate pudding, a treacle pudding, and all different things But, when you've got 20-odd men trying to share a box, you don't go far with it, do you? We used to get them when I was out in Africa with a 57th anti-tank. We used to get them delivered on a night time because they couldn't come out during the day because the Jerrys would see them and shell them. And 9 times out of 10, the chocolate had been missing, or the cigs had been missing, when they sent them out from them stores, you couldn't say, well, that was missing and that was missing. They'd delivered it and that was it. You couldn't check it, yeah.
So were you hungry all the time?
Well, most of the time. You managed as best you could.
What did you have to drink?
Well, water and that.
Could you get enough?
What, water? Oh yes, you could get water. But
were the taps operating?
Yeah, you could get a drink. It was all right for that late, but otherwise, you couldn't get any hot stuff. So,
could you sleep?
Not much. You don't sleep too much. Yeah. Yeah, so to sleep, you're not allowed to wake up if you go into a deep sleep. Yeah.
Because the enemy would kill you.
Yes, that was it. And to be careful.
Did you see any senior ranks?
When?
During these 4 days of fighting.
All I saw was another bombardier from the battery. And he came round while the gun was in good order, like, and after that, I never saw him anymore.
Were you a corporal yourself?
No, not then. No. No, as I say, I was a gun layer. Yeah, I was always a gun layer.
So you said after the 4 days, you got the order to pull out?
No. It was on the, what was it? On the Monday. We got the order to pull out, the Monday. That was the, what would that be? I think that would be the 25th. There was, that marched through the wood, where the 75 millimetres, the light ACAC of one of the batteries. And they'd laid lines, white lines down to go through the woods down to the river to get the boats that was coming across. And you had the Canadians was fetching the boats, and there was one lot for the Poles and one lot for our lot. And I got down there, be about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I got down. And there was men trying to swim across and get it carried down the river. Others was trying to hang on to the boat sides and that late, but, you know. And it come to about 5:30, getting late. And of course the Germans just come over the top and that was it, like. I was staying prisoner then.
What happened when you were taken prisoner?
Well, I was marched into Arnhem.
How did they treat you at first?
No, they didn't bother us really, like. Marched us into Arnhem and then interrogated us, like, well, all you give them was your rank and your number, and that was it. No more. But they knew who we was, actually, yeah.
How could they know?
Well, they must have known, because they just said, Airborne Division, you know. They knew straight away. I mean, they have their spies, same as we have our spies, and I'm always certain that somebody had given the nod before we ever landed there. Yeah, and then they put us on railway wagons and they stopped at Cologne one time, and while I was on the wagons, and they're still there. That tower was still there in Cologne, like. The planes hadn't knocked that out because they knew where there was our planes. Yeah. And then after that, they took us down to Dresden. I was put in a prisoner of war camp in Dresden.
In the city or just outside?
Beg your pardon?
In the city or outside?
In the city. Shut up. And we was sent out on working parties then.
Doing what?
Well, odd jobs here, there and everywhere. Working down by the river one time, and then another time near the railway station working. Then another time we went into a yard. It belonged to a Feldwebel. He had a house up on the hill and the land sloped down. And a couple of bombs had been dropped in the yard. And of course, he wanted us to go and fill them in, like, you know. And of course, he said, I can look down on you and see you working. And if you don't work properly, I'll have you coming back and doing some extra work, like. So of course, we had to have a pick, a shovel, and iron bar and what have you, like. It was winter time, the ground was hard. Yeah, so. And of course, the Ardennes, the Germans had made a push. And they had captured a load of Americans, and they was working down by the river on railway wagons, and they was unloading railway wagons. And inside them railway wagons was boxes of Libby's milk, small tins of Libby's milk, 96 in a box. So I don't know whether they'd captured them or what, like, but they was unloading them anyway. And we had some Dutchmen with us, and they was working down in the German barracks. It was further down the road from where our camp was. And they'd managed to rig up a radio.